cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It is Aces. Tennis coverage here with our great friend Tom Tebbett. I'm Roger LeJuan. Thank you for supporting the show and being with us again this week. Your questions for Tom are always welcome. Tom loves them. Mailbag is open at the Rog 590 on Twitter. You can tweet them or email Roger at Sportsnet590.ca and Tom will answer your questions throughout the show. We'll do that later in the show. We don't have much in a way of guests on the program today. Let's do a little name dropping. Roger, not me, Roger Federer, Vasek Pospisil, Michael Russell, another great tennis player. He's coming up in the first segment. Boy, you did some good work this week, Mr. Tebbett. You must be very proud of yourself.
I had to hustle at the Rogers Cup.
Did you run around with your little tape recorder and bug him like a kid for an autograph? And
well, I did a little bit of that. I actually talked to Rogers' agent, who was very nice, and managed to allow me to have a few minutes with him. It's not a huge feature interview, but we had a little bit of fun. And the thing is, when you're up there, you're always looking for a quiet place to do these interviews because you want radio quality, you know,
sure.
Sound. So managed to sneak in a few places and get it done.
Well, congratulations. We look forward to it. So, folks, Roger Federer in conversation with Tom Tebbett. A couple of minutes of real nice radio. And Vasek Pospisil, that's in the second half of the program. Michael Russell, American tennis player. We'll talk about him in a second. Also on the show today. And Rogers Cup is over. We've been giving away Rogers Cup tickets. But we're going to do some trivia at the end of the show tonight. And what we'll do is whoever answers the question correctly, we'll get their name entered into the draw for the Wilson tennis racket twice. So we'll do that in the last couple of shows. So all of the winners who have won Rogers Cup tickets, and we hope you enjoyed the Rogers Cup in Toronto, those of you who were down there, their names will be entered. And if you answer the trivia question the next couple of weeks, we've got three more shows, two after this week, then you'll get two entries into the Wilson tennis racket as well. So we can have some fun with that a little later in the program. All that is coming up. What came up today was a very interesting day in Cincinnati. Any reason for Novak to be concerned? This is another early knockout here. Let's start with him before we get to Milos.
Yeah, a bit of a surprise. Tommy Robredo did beat Federer last year at the U.S. Open. That was probably his biggest win of his career. But, Roger had the back problem. And we don't really know what's going on with Novak. I mean, there's three or four theories. But, I mean, one of them being it's a hangover from winning Wimbledon. Number two, the fact that he just got married. Number three.
Oh, that'll do it to you.
Well, maybe. And number three is the fact that Nadal is AWOL, and Nadal had 1,000 points to defend in Toronto and 1,000 points to defend this week. So Novak is number one to start with, and Nadal is just slipping like mad. And
no real motivation, really, in terms of.
He had big motivation in Cincinnati for one reason, is that if he'd won Cincinnati, he would have become the only player to win all nine Masters 1000 tournaments. Hmm. So I think he was a bit pumped for that. So who knows? But it's kind of strange. And the other thing today is, anybody who saw the match saw this, and as well may have remembered seeing this last fall, is that Novak seemed to be sort of disoriented, or not exactly disoriented, but sort of stumbling around, losing his balance inexplicably. And it happened, I watched almost all the first set, and then saw a fair bit of the second as well. And he seemed very, very frustrated. Huh. And so it's a strange sort of happening. So he goes into the U.S. Open having won one match in Toronto, one match in Cincinnati. We don't know if Nadal's going to be there. And Federer actually is playing very soon against Monfils, and Federer wins. He plays against Andy Murray, who himself had an exciting day. He saved two match points against John Isner. And so
that was a great match.
It was a great match, and it's good for Murray, I think, for his confidence, because he's been a little, really hasn't been to the final of a tournament since winning Wimbledon last year.
Isn't it really amazing when you look at it, Tom? Because it's all been about the big four in men's tennis, and here we are on the eve of the U.S. Open in New York, and then you slice it down and you realize Roger Federer is probably in better shape right now going into that tournament than either of the other three guys. Like, what an astounding turnaround in a couple of months.
Well, yeah, you have to say that. I mean, I think a lot of us, you know, would love to see Federer win, like, especially the people who are disappointed they didn't win the Wimbledon final, if he could somehow come through at the U.S. Open. So you don't want to jinx it by saying that. Lo and behold, Nadal, I think, is supposed to reveal sometime this week whether he's going to be able to play the U.S. Open. So if he plays, then we know what happens when Federer comes up against Nadal. It's usually a no-go. So if Nadal's in there, that could be a problem for him. But really, Djokovic a little shaky, Nadal uncertain, Murray hasn't shown much for a while, so Federer is really the proven quantity going into the U.S. Open. Now, he could lose tonight against Monfils, and it actually is a big match tomorrow if he does play Murray, so that'll be interesting as well. But, you know, getting to the final of the Rogers Cup shows that, you know, he's in fine form, And even if he has a hiccup here somewhere, I think he's still going to look pretty good shape going to the U.S. Open.
Let's talk a little bit about the Rogers Cup before we get more into Cincinnati, because I thought terrific tournaments. Disappointing from the Canadian contingent for sure, but maybe a couple of words on how the events went over, because I tell you, the buzz in Toronto this year was fantastic. I spent a couple of days in Montreal. I went down twice. I saw a Jeannie Loser match, by the way. That was astounding. That night in that at Uniprix Stadium was people are, especially the first set, people are looking at each other like, what in the name of heavens has happened to her? We'll get to her because, of course, she lost yesterday as well. But the events themselves, Tom, I don't think they've ever been bigger in this country. No surprise, though.
Well, of course, we had legitimate Canadian contenders, which we'd never had before. So obviously, Bouchard in Montreal, Milos Scheer, and Vasek Pospisil. Everybody thought he could do well, although he did come in here a little overdone because he'd had to finish a quarterfinal in Washington, play his semifinal. Then he played Milos in the final. And it finally caught up with him against Gasquet in his first round. But yeah, no, they all those players, and especially Bouchard, I guess, in Montreal. Because anyway, I'm curious to know, what was it like, or what did you think about Bouchard that night? We were all sort of stunned.
I couldn't believe what was happening. I could not believe her reaction. We've talked about her so much. I mean, just seeing it in person, it was astounding. You could see she was miserable. She was having a difficult night. She wanted to get off the court as it came out. You know, you're not hearing that when you're sitting in the stands, but you're watching it and going, what is happening? And then she comes back in the second set and that's okay. Everything's okay. That was just one of those things. And the third set was just as bad. It was, Tom, it was just an astounding night to see her, I don't want to say collapse like that, but it was just real bad performance. What do you say?
Well, the only theory I had is I did hear that at the end of the second set, and because I'm from Montreal and I've seen lots of games at the Forum watched them at the Bell Center, when the Montreal crowds, when, you know, Jean Beliveau or Guy Lafleur or somebody comes back, you can't stop them from clapping. They'll clap for 15 minutes to hell with you. Mm-hmm. They, you know, people in Toronto,
different. Yeah.
So I understand they gave her a huge ovation at the end of the second set. So I wondered if that kind of made her nervous again. You know, because she just got going, and then all of a sudden, here's the crowd going totally nuts for me again.
In other words, I better win.
Well, yeah, a little bit, you know, just sort of reinforces whatever stress she was feeling a little bit. So I'm not making excuses for her, but I can just see those cheers and all that noise raining down on you, and you think you're under control, and all of a sudden you relapse back into maybe the way you were in the first set.
And then you lose a couple of bad points at the start of the third set, and you're right back where you started the match. It's an interesting way of looking at it. Tom Tebbit, Roger Lajoie, it's Aces on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We already got some questions coming in. That's what we love. Roger at sportsnet590.ca is email. Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Or drop us a tweet. You can reach me on Twitter at TheRog590. Tom's at Tom Tebbit. You want to ask his question through there as well, and we'll answer the questions a little later. Roger Federer and Vasek Pospisil in conversation with Tom later in the program. So don't go away tonight, folks. We got a terrific lineup here for you, and Michael Russell coming up in a couple of minutes. Okay. Then there is Milos's performance at the Rogers Cup. You were in Toronto. Explanation, rationale, what did you think?
He didn't play that well in his first two matches. I mean, he played at Benetton, I think, at Sauk, and he wasn't playing that well. He didn't, and full marks to Feliciano Lopez, although it was a reverse when he played Federer in the semifinals. He played a very good match against Milos, but Milos, 9 break points, early in that third set. If he gets one of those, I would say that Lopez isn't one of the sturdiest or one of the gutsiest players out there. I think Milos would have won that match. So it's hard to believe he couldn't get any one of those 9 in that one game. But, you know, I think he was feeling some pressure here, too. And he had a tight match today against Johnson from the U.S. and got through that one okay. And now he plays Fabio Fognini, who's been going nuts at tournaments all summer long. He's been breaking rackets and sort of looked like he's trying 1 minute, not trying the next. So anybody who gets a chance to see that tomorrow.
He's a colorful player.
He's a very, very talented player, too. He's fun to watch because he's got a tremendous variety of shots. But he's a total space cadet in terms of, you know, concentration. So you never know what you're going to get from him. But it should be entertaining because if Milos clobbers him, he'll be beside himself. And if he's winning, then you're going to see like this genius at work. So it should be an interesting match tomorrow. And if Milos wins that, he plays the winner of Murray and Federer in the semifinals, which would also be very interesting.
Great tune-up for the U.S. Open for him for sure. On the women's side, the usual suspects going through. Serena Williams had been up and down up until the last couple of weeks, but she gets a big win. Simona Halep also moving on. Maria Sharapova in straight sets as well. Boy, we're going to see some pretty good tennis in the rest of Cincinnati on the women's side.
Yeah, it looks like it. You actually, tonight, is Kuznetsova's playing against Ivanovic, and that would have been Bouchard against Ivanovic if
she'd won.
She'd won last night. That would have been fun to see. So nice to see Halep back. Obviously, she was in the final of the French Open in the semifinals of Wimbledon. Took a break after. She actually played back in Romania right after Wimbledon, so she'd take a longer break. Didn't go to Montreal. So she wins, so she's good. I think she plays Sharapova now, which should be interesting. And then we have, as you say, we got Ivanovic going tonight against Kuznetsova. Radwanska, I think, is still going. and she could maybe play Wozniak or Kerber in her quarterfinal. And Serena is going to play Yankovic now. Yankovic pulled out a close match against Sloane Stephens today.
Jeannie Bouchard yesterday, an analysis, what happened to her?
Listen, I didn't think it was that bad a match. I mean, she lost earlier this year on the during the clay court season to Kuznetsova, so no surprise Kuznetsova has won two Grand Slam tournaments.
Good player.
She's a good player, and she won that first set. Bouchard looked rusty a little, just wasn't that sure about her shots in the first set. Won the second fairly convincingly. I thought she'd carry it over and win the third just because Kuznetsova can get a little nervous herself. But, you know, around 2-all, 3-all in the third set, Bouchard made some kind of inexplicable errors, just, you know, unforced errors, and you sort of wonder why that happened. So I think she's just not as sharp as she should be. And I think when you think about it, with what's happened to her, you know, getting to the Wimbledon final, I mean, just I can't underestimate, you know, what a huge sort of thing that was and how much was made of it. And for her to sort of come down from that and then get geared up again. She's playing next week in New Haven. It'll be fun to see how she does there. And I was on the McCowan show earlier today, and I did a little checking, and all the current players, none of the current players on the tour, from Serena to Sharapova to Yankovic to anybody, none of them have ever been in all four Grand Slams in the same year.
Yeah.
So if Bouchard makes it to the semifinals of the U.S. Open, it would be something that, you know, Steffi Graf did it, Martina Navratilova did it. Players like that did it, but none
of
these.
She's going to need the matches, I think. She has not played a heck of a lot either. That's another problem.
No, but she lost her first match, but maybe a bit of a knee problem after the French Open. She lost to Vanya King in Eastbourne, and, you know, certainly revved it up for Wimbledon. So she's capable of doing it again. So I'm not about to give up on her right now. I think she's gonna put it together for the U.S. Open, but it always depends a bit on the draw. And the other thing, of course, is that she's a target now. I mean, everybody's trying to beat her. When they play against her, there's no pressure on them. They just swing for the fences and hit some good shots, put her under pressure, and maybe she starts feeling it a bit.
Yeah, it's heading to the next level. That's what happens. Aces is brought to you by Tennis Canada, leading the growth of tennis in Canada. And they not done a great job in this country the last little while. I'm Roger Lajoie. Tom Tebbett is with me. It's Aces on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and you can reach the show on email, roger@sportsnet590.ca. We're taking questions for Tom all night. roger@sportsnet590.ca, and we'll answer them before the top of the hour. In our second half hour of today's program, Roger Federer and Vasek Pospisil in conversation with our own Tom Tebbett. But speaking of conversations, you had a very nice one with another pretty good player, for a veteran player, Michael Russell. Tell us about him.
Well, yeah, he could be playing the seniors, couldn't he? He's 36 years old. I think last year he was the second oldest guy in the top 100. Tommy Haas was a little bit older than him. But I've always admired this guy. He says he's 5'8". I'm not sure. It could be a little bit less than that. 5'7", 5'6". 155 pounds. He went to college for a year, and then he went on the pro tour. You'll see in my first question, very interesting answer, puts it in perspective about the fact that, you know, a guy who's never ranked, I think his highest singles ranking is 60. He just is a guy who's maxed out in his talents. And I know Tennis Canada coaches have told young players, go out and watch this guy, because this is the way you get 100% of what you got. So here's my chat with Michael Russell. Michael Russell, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
I don't know if you realize it, but 5 years in the top 100, if you were a Canadian, you'd hold the record.
I didn't realize that. It's a good stat to have.
How proud of you of finishing in the top 100? And obviously, it's not like Federer 17 Grand Slams, but it does take some effort to, you know, show that kind of consistency.
Yeah, more than some effort. It's a lot of effort. It's very difficult, you know, especially how difficult the game is now, how physical it is. I'm very proud of facts, you know, especially all over the age of 30.
And how exactly did you get started in tennis? I think maybe it had something to do with your parents.
Yeah, my father taught me how to play. I grew up in a tennis family. My mom played recreationally, and I have an older brother, 3 years older, that played collegiately.
And so what was the route you took to eventually getting to the ATP Tour and playing Grand Slams?
It was a long one. You know, I used to travel to junior tournaments with my brother, and then I excelled in the U.S. junior events. I was part of the national team, played international junior events such as French Open Juniors, Wimbledon, Australian Open, U.S. Open Juniors. And I played collegiately at the University of Miami, Florida in 96. Played really well. And after that, it's history. I played great coming right out of college. And then 2.5 years right out of college, I broke into the top 100.
So 1997 is a long time ago. How have you lasted so long?
I spent a lot of time on recovery, which is such key, and I have a great support group, you know, with my wife and family and friends that have, you know, continued to encourage me and progress in the sport.
Probably the match you're the most famous for, unfortunately, ended up on the short end, but the French Open in 2001, fourth round, you have a match point on Gustavo Kuerten, who was about to win his third French Open. What are the memories of that moment and that match?
Oh, well, it's incredible. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't realize I was actually down match point first round of the qualifying event, you know, seven matches prior. So for me, even to be at that point was amazing. And, you know, it's very special, you know, to play on Philippe Chartrey and be so close at beating the number one player in the world, best clay courter at that time. Was really special. Of course, I wish I won the match, but, you know, hey, what can you do?
But the actual match point, as I recall it, didn't he hit a ball right on the line? So you were that close to...
It was crazy. Yeah, he went half on the line, you know. Unfortunately, I couldn't call it out. And, the rest is history. He won his third French Open.
I think everybody knows that Guga is sort of a very beloved guy in tennis. Do you have some sort of relationship since then? Do you run into him ever?
I don't. I don't really see him that often. We played a couple times actually after that match in some of the other events. Always a very likable guy, great charisma, and I think that's why he was so well-liked.
Your record at the U.S. Open is 0-9, and it's your home Grand Slam. You've won at least two matches at all the other Grand Slams. What's the problem playing at home in New York?
Part of it's the draw. If they gave me a better draw, I think it would help. The last seven U.S. Opens, I've played somebody top 25 in the world first round. So it's kind of... I've been a little unlucky with the draw gods. Maybe I need to sit there and watch him pull the hat. And, you know, I hope it can work out a little better in my favor.
What do you enjoy most about tennis, just the actual on-the-court playing of the sport?
The competition, the one-on-one competition, it's so unique. It's the only sport where you literally have no help. You know, boxing, you still have that, you know, trainer in the corner at the end of the three-minute bell. Golf, you have your caddy. Where tennis, you're the only one out there playing. It's kind of like a gladiator sport, and I've always relished that, and that's my favorite part of the whole sport. You know, that's why I keep continuing to play. I just love it.
You're 5'8". Do you ever imagine what kind of a player Michael Russell would be if he was 6'3"?
I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, you could say that, but there's a lot of things in life you say woulda, shoulda, coulda. You know, we all have certain things, but... I mean, at the end of the day, I try to get the most out of everything, you know, my body, my height. I think I have a great serve for my height. It's allowed me to play successfully the last 5 years. But it's hard to say.
And how do you have such a good serve, being one of the shorter players on the tour?
A lot of strength, a lot of, you know, worked on my technique quite a few times over the years. And... you know, I really got to use my body. And, you know, that's part of being the recovery and making sure that, you know, I'm very muscular and using all that muscle and looseness and technique to get up into the ball.
You've been around the game for so long. Who would you say is the most impressive person you've seen sort of in tennis as a player or maybe somebody else, but mostly as a player?
Well, I guess it depends. Impressive as far as on the court, like performance-wise or off the court? Or
maybe just all around sort of the strength of personality and as a player as well.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Roger Federer is amazing, and just the way he plays, so graceful. I think Roger's, is he 31 now, 32?
33 in a couple of days.
33 in a couple of days, so, you know, it's great to see. His love for the game, his passion is phenomenal. You know, I like it because a lot of times, you know, people will write him off, and then he'll come back and be like, hey, guys, no, you can't write me off. I'm one of the greatest players, if not greatest player of all time. I still have a lot of success, you know, behind me, and it's great to see.
And how would you, as a player who hasn't been, you know, one of the top 50 or top 40 guys and there maybe in terms with him right till the end every time, how would you get along with him? What kind of relationship would you have with him?
I get along well with Roger. I mean, we played back in 2007, first round of the French Open, and I spoke with him a little bit here in the gym before one of his practices. Very friendly guy, down to earth. And that's why he's so likable, you know, by the fans as well. He's got great charisma and... great personality, which makes him, you know, so marketable.
Do you ever appreciate your relative anonymity as a tennis pro? I mean, in some ways, personally, I don't know if I'd want to be Roger Federer or Rafael Nadal not being able to walk down the street. Do you appreciate the fact that you're a world-class athlete in a fantastic sport, and yet probably in your private life you have a privacy that a lot of the players, the top players, wouldn't have?
I think it depends. I mean, tennis, as much as I love the sport, it's not... You know, I mean, Roger can walk down the U.S. streets and people are like, but wouldn't even know who he is, unfortunately. You know, our sport isn't as popular as, you know, basketball, football, baseball in the USA. So it doesn't have that, I don't think, paparazzi issue as much as others. But I think they should relish it a little bit. I mean, that's the part of being so successful at your sport is that it comes with, you know, certain marketing demands and public appeal.
Is there anything you change in tennis in terms of the rules or the way the sport's administered or the schedule? Do you have any pet peeves about tennis?
Not so much about the way it's ruled. I think it's a difficult sport because a lot of times you don't have set times, you know, for the beginning. And also, you know, the beginning of a tournament, you don't know necessarily who's going to be in the semifinals or the finals, which is on the weekend, and that's prime time airing on television networks. So that makes it difficult where other sports, you know who, what team is playing at what time, and then that really, you know, can get a lot of sponsorship dollars involved.
But there's nothing in terms of, like, they should have lets or, I don't know, just generally the way the Hawkeye challenges, the rules and things like that, that you sort of find maybe something you would change?
It's tough. I mean, I think Hawkeye's great. You know, it engages the fans, and it takes the human element, the error out of it, especially if it's a big point. And, you know, I think that it's really beneficial for the sport. It's hard to say. I mean, if you add lets or no add, you would have to have some kind of trial basis to see how the fans would engage it and, you know, how the players would respond to it.
How has the game changed, and how has your own game changed since you first came onto the Pro Tour?
Well, it's a lot more physical. You can see the matches are a lot more grueling. Everybody's fit. Everybody has nutritional needs. You know, it's a lot more of a business. You know, and I think that's also accredited to that the dollar value has gone up as well in a lot of the tournaments. As far as myself, you know, I'm constantly trying to improve my own game, whether that's equipment, the way I play, trying to play a little more aggressive, and also my nutritional needs, just keeping up with the players, you know, and that's allowed me to be top 100 the last 5 years.
What have you been able to do in terms of equipment to improve your game?
Well, I mean, I started off playing a standard length racket and very head light, overall heavy, and I've switched to a longer racket now. I've been using Babolat now for 7 years, the Pure Drive, which is a great racket, and I've changed the weight as well, and that's worked well for me, and, you know, I've continued to use that.
What's been your biggest thrill, the most memorable moment as a tennis professional?
It's a good question. I mean, there's a lot of thrills. I've played in all four main stadium courts and all Grand Slams, which is really neat. You know, anytime you win a tournament, I've won 15 challengers, which is phenomenal when you win a challenger. You get a decent crowd. You know, I like competing. I like competing in front of an audience. You know, even today, you know, playing, you have a few thousand people. It's fantastic. You know, you have great points and you get the applause, and that's why I'm out there.
When on the court have you felt the most helpless? In other words, maybe who's the best guy you've ever played against in terms of stroke for stroke, being out there and trying to do your best, but maybe not having much of a shot because the player's just so damn good?
That's tough. I mean, when I walk on court, I always feel that I have a shot of winning, even if the guy's number one in the world. I want to, you know, believe in that, and that's one of the things that's helped me for so long. You know, obviously, playing Roger, you know, at the French Open that year in 2007, he was playing exceptionally well. And, you know, it was a close match. It was 6-4, 6-2, 6-4. So, it was respectable. But, you know, we didn't have a lot of rallies. You know, he was serving incredible. And then I would have a lot of service games where I'd hold easy. But then he'd also hit some incredible shots to break me. So there wasn't a lot of rhythm. And then I don't want to say helpless, but you felt a little bit like it's not the rhythm and the usual tennis rallies that you're used to.
What kind of advice would you have for a young professional starting out today based on all the things you've learned over your career?
You got to be patient, you got to work hard, you got to have a lot of perseverance, and you got to learn to pick yourself up when things don't go well. There's going to be a lot of highs and lows and in life in general, but, you know, on the tennis court, there's only one winner every week. So even if you're number one in the world, you're really only winning 6 or 7 tournaments a year. So you got to deal with losing as well as you can.
How do you deal with that?
Well, you got to pick yourself up. You got to improve. You know, you got to be positive, and you got to say, "Hey, you know, I need to get better. You know, I don't want to lose. I hate losing," and that's how you do it. And that's the champions do that. That's why he's so good, because, you know, you take the heartbreak losses and you're able to turn around and have those wins. And same with me. You know, on a different scale, I still, you know, have losses, and I turn it around and improve. And you look back and, why did I lose? How can I improve upon that, and how can I become a better player? And you're constantly striving to be a better player and improve.
You have a business degree, I think, from the University of Phoenix, and you're 36 years old now. So where do you see yourself in 10 years? Would it still be involved in tennis, or would it be in some other field completely different?
That's another good question. Depends. I would love to be involved in tennis, and I've spent basically almost my whole life being around it and being incorporated with it. So if I can help out either other players or, you know, the sport of tennis in general, I would love to do that. If it doesn't go that direction, I would love to do something with sports performance, kinesiology, because I think I have a lot of knowledge just from dealing with all the injuries and being able to play so late in my career and still be successful.
Seems to me a guy like you who's really had to tough it out and, you know, hasn't had it easy and has made a living playing the tour for so long would be an excellent guy to be a coach. Could you see yourself being a coach, especially obviously it'd be nice to be a coach of one of the very top players?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, I would love to be a coach for maybe one of the top players because, you know, it's a lot of travel and I've been traveling almost my whole life. So either with the federation, university, or one of the top players, I think I could help them a lot.
So is there a Michael Russell fan club anywhere or a Michael Russell website that our listeners can go to?
I have a Twitter account, at MRussellTennis, and you can follow me there. And I usually respond to a lot of personal tweets as well. Fan club, I don't have that, but, you know, I'm always engaging. So if you want to come out to a tournament, or I live in Houston, so if you're in Houston and you want to see me practice, I'm always there. I'm always very friendly.
Michael Russell, thanks for being on the show tonight.
Thanks, Tom.
Terrific guy, Tom, just from the conversation I have with him. And you said it yourself. He has overcome so much just to be able to play at an elite level. And you say, well, only number 60 in the world. Number 60 in the world with everyone playing tennis and his size and stature, he's a great story.
Yeah, to get there was pretty incredible. No, he's been a very nice guy. I should say that when I talked to him, it was just about an hour and a half after he lost in three sets to the number 5 seed, David Ferrer. And he's, as you could hear, he's a very competitive guy. So he was still maybe a little bit down, but he was very, very gracious. And I've always wanted to sort of get that side of tennis, the guys who aren't like the big guys in the limelight all the time, but they're out there slogging it out. And in a way, they probably get just as much from the abilities as the top guys, but they just don't have that basic ability to start with.
Well, Michael Russell, a great example of that, a conversation with Tom and Michael Russell. But now we're going to talk, and Tom's going to talk, a couple of players who are doing pretty well. How about Vasek Pospisil and Roger Federer coming up? Although Federer's down 2-0 tonight.
Yes, he is. And yeah, we should say that these are just sort of fun interviews. You know, I don't think we wanted to get into the whys and wherefores of their whole lives or anything. So I had 9 questions, which I asked them. And next week, we're going to have Andy Murray and Daniel Nestor answering the same questions. So Vasek and Roger answer the same set of questions in a few minutes.
Can't wait. That's coming up. And Aces is brought to you in part by Tennis Canada, leading the growth of tennis in Canada. I'm Roger Lajoie, Tom Tebbett with me. You're listening to Aces, Roger Federer, and Vasek Pospisil on the way on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
This is Milos Raonic, and you're listening to Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. This is Aces. I'm Roger Lajoie, along with Tom Tebbett. Aces is brought to you in part by National Bank, proud sponsor of both the Rogers Cups. Visit them at nbctennis.ca, and we thank them for their sponsorship, not just of tennis in this great country, but of our show as well. Coming up in moments, Roger Federer in conversation with Tom Tebbett. Before we get to Roger, Vasek Pospisil. And again, Tom said it for us. He asked both the guys the same questions, right?
Tell us. Yep. About. Well, I don't know how I came up with them, but I just thought of, I knew that to get a hold of Roger, you're not going to ask him, you know, when did you start playing tennis and what's your main thing you do with your second serve and what's going on with your forehand.
I mean, good thing you didn't ask him those questions.
Yeah, of course, the obvious one, too, is when are you going to stop? I mean, those guys just go brain dead if you ask them those kind of things. So I tried to ask questions that were a little bit off the cuff and or a little bit off the beaten track and that maybe would make it a little more fun for them to answer something that probably they don't get asked every day.
Speaking of questions, you can email us, Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Better hurry because we've got lots of questions for Tom. We're going to do them before the top of the show and we'll give you a trivia question a little bit later as well. But enough about the ado. Let's get right to it. Tom, in conversation with Vasek Pospisil.
Vasek Pospisil, do you remember the first person you ever beat in tennis?
Yeah, it was actually like a 7 or 8 year old girl. I played a under 10 tournament, and that was the first match I ever played. I was 6 years old, and there weren't many players in the area, and they joined the girls with the boys, so that was my first win.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
What was the first racket you ever used, and what do you remember about it?
Well, it was definitely Wilson. I remember it being light, children's racket. Is like a very light, small racket. I think I was like maybe 3 or 4 years old when I started whacking around, but it was a Wilson. That's the important thing to take from this.
If for one day you could play in someone other player's body, maybe one of the top players, just to really experience what it's like to play inside their body and play their kind of tennis, which player would you choose?
Good question. I would say Roger. Yeah, Federer, just because he's greatest player of all time and mega talent. So I just want to feel what it's like.
And who was your favorite athlete growing up? Not necessarily a tennis player.
Favorite athlete growing up. I was a huge fan of Jaromir Jagr and Peter Nedved. They were both.
Both happened to be Czech, right?
Yeah, they both happened to be Czech. So watching a lot of I was watching a lot of Czech sports back then.
What do you like the most, or what do you appreciate the most about your parents?
The sacrifices they've done their whole lives for the family. It's really pretty amazing what they've done, and I'm so lucky to have such a loving family all around, brothers and everything. So that'd be it right there.
Well, this is a similar question, but what do you like most and appreciate most about Tom and Peter, your two brothers?
Yeah, I mean they're my best friends. They're so nice. I was always a younger brother, and by even growing up, they never mistreated me, or I was really spoiled. They were really nice to me, and now they're like a part of my entourage. Sometimes my Tom comes to a lot of tournaments, and so it's just great having them around. They do they support me a lot and every decision I make, and they're always by my side.
You guys obviously fly a lot for your jobs, and if you fly first class, that takes care of a lot of problems. But is there any secret to making flying a little bit easier, except for having business class, obviously?
Yeah, I don't fly business very much, so. it's a good question. I mean, I guess it just comes with experience, just like anything. You kind of learn to pick up little tricks and here and there what you have to do. And now I have a really good idea of when I have to actually be at the airport. They always say 3 hours, but that's not actually the case. And I've been figuring those kind of little tricks out lately. And obviously, it helps to have a frequent flyer program and to go through lines quickly.
Back in the old days, I once interviewed Rod Laver, and he told me that he drank beer, and the tennis players drank beer because of the barley and the hops and all that good stuff in the beer. Nowadays, none of the tennis players seem to drink beer. Are you a beer drinker, and can you explain why not as many guys drink beer anymore?
I guess it's the trend. It's the trend, and it's alcohol, and I think everybody's just being very precise with their diets, and so no alcohol intake, obviously, but... I don't drink beer, but I love the taste. I think it's great, and I guess I'll probably be a beer drinker when I'm done my career. I enjoy it, but I don't do it.
Vasek Pospisil with our own Tom Tebbit. Great guy. That's a fun way to do the interviews, boy. And you know what? All kidding aside, with those guys, how could you have the bodies those guys do and pound the beers like some guys used to do back in the day? These guys are body fat. It's incredible.
Well, I don't know.
Come on, Tom.
One beer after you play, I'm telling you, when I've played a long match, there's nothing that tastes better than a beer. I'm telling you, it does fill you up. And
preach into the choir, buddy. Preach into the choir. Tom Tebbit with Vasek Pospisil. Okay, so now next week we got Andy Murray and Daniel Nestor, you said. Same questions for Roger Federer. What's he like one-on-one before we get to this? Like, what kind of a guy is he?
Well, no, I know him a little bit. I don't think he really knows my name, but he's seen me around enough, and I've interviewed him a couple of times before, and as I've said many times, I know his agent from when he used to be the agent for Justin Robichaud way back in the mid-90s, a Montreal player. So, I just can't think. The guy is just ridiculously nice, and apparently all the things I heard, he was fantastic last week. But I saw him in the players' lounge about an hour after he lost in the final. and apparently he was there for a whole hour.
Answering questions.
Yeah, and then apparently his daughters rushed up to him and smushed him in the face and stuff like that. And then they said, well, how come you lost the big match, Daddy, or something? And he just, but I think he's reached a point now where he's just enjoying himself. He's rolling with the punches. He's having a good time. He's not getting upset if he loses. And that doesn't mean he doesn't have the fire when he's on the court. But I just think he realizes that this is finite now. There's only a few years left, and he's just going to have fun. And he loves the circuit. He loves being on the tour.
He deserves a success for sure. Here he is, the one, the only, in conversation with our own Tom Tebbit, Roger Federer.
Roger, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Do you remember the first person you ever beat in tennis?
On the tour, no.
No, like wherever in your life.
In my life? Yeah. No way. No, of course not.
No? Father, your mother, maybe? No?
Well, I don't remember which one was exactly my first junior tournament. And I don't think I beat my parents for a long time, so it must have been some other guy from practice who was about my age.
And what was your first racket, and what do you remember about your first racket?
Well, I had a first racket. It was like actually a wooden racket. And I used to also play with the white tennis balls back in the day until I then changed. And I borrowed the racket to a friend of mine, and he never gave it back to me. So that's my first memory, my first wooden racket.
If for one day you could be inside another player's body to really understand how they play the game, one of the top players, whose body would you like to be inside and see how they play the game?
Like today?
Yeah.
Probably Rafa, just because it's so different to how I play the game. And I think his approach is so different, and it's so interesting to see like how any approach can be very successful, you know, mine or his or somebody else's. But of course, I think we've been intrigued from one another's game over the years, and he would be probably the one I would pick, yeah.
And who was your favorite athlete when you were growing up?
Well, it was Becker, Hedberg, and Michael Jordan for me, yeah.
Is there a sport you're really bad at?
Yeah, I mean, I guess. one I've never done or never tried before, but I don't know if it's a sport, you know, but like when you stand on this like surfboard and you just like row, I was looking at the people doing it. I was like, oh my God, this looks so easy and silly. And then I tried and I couldn't really do it. That was embarrassing.
And what do you like most about your parents? What is the best thing your parents have done for you?
Just been there for me and given me the freedom, but the supportive side, and just expecting me to sort of try to give my best, which was very hard for me when I was younger. But I didn't feel too much pressure from them, and that's why I'm so happy that if they came to every tournament during the year, I'd be happy, and if they chose not to come to any, that'd be okay too, whatever works for them. And I think with this balance, it's really been a key for me to become the player I am today.
What do you like most about your sister?
I mean, she's really nice, you know, very interesting. How we have had totally different ways of growing up. I was totally into sports. She was not so much. She became a nurse. I became a tennis player. I don't know. So when we do speak to each other, you know, we speak about everything and not just about what we personally do.
And flying, obviously business class is a good way to enjoy flying and make it easier. Is there anything else that makes it easier for you?
Good organization, you know, knowing what you're getting into. If you can avoid transit, that's always a good thing, in my opinion.
And last question is Rod Laver. I interviewed him 30, 40 years ago. He said a good beer was great after tennis because the hops and the barley and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't the guys drink beer anymore?
I don't know. I'm not a beer guy at all. So for me, I'd rather be like the dessert guy or ice cream kind of guy, you know, or sweets. I ate a lot of sweets when I was younger. But today I tend more to go into the whole chocolate and coffee thing, you know, to be quite honest.
Roger Federer, sounds like he had a lot of fun doing that interview with you. What a great guy.
Yeah, no, he's a terrific guy. People just couldn't say enough things about him this past week. And I've been around him a little at times at tournaments, and just anybody, he'll remember to say hello and ask you how you are. And you just don't think you'd get that from, you know, from somebody who's so important. They have better things to do than to be good at the little things. But he's very good at the little things with everyone.
One of the greatest of all time, Roger Federer, in conversation with our own Tom Tebbit. Had a lot of fun with that. Vasek Pospisil as well. Next week, or 2 weeks from now, on Thursday, August 28th, when we return, Andy Murray, Daniel Nestor get the same questions from Tom. So be sure to check in on that. Now, speaking of questions for Tom, have we got a ton. I hope you're ready and you brought your A game. Oh, I'm worried already. Constantine says, with Rafa skipping Toronto and Cincinnati and the fact that Nadal is the type of player that needs reps to be sharp, do you think Nadal might be more vulnerable for an upset at the U.S. Open in the early rounds?
Roger, this is a short answer. Yes, I do.
Okay, good. That's good that we get more questions that way. Obviously, it is. It could be a big factor.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's a guy who likes to play a lot of matches, likes to sort of get in a groove. But I think he still has been hitting forehands. It's his right wrist, so he can't hit two-handed backhands. But he has been hitting forehands, and maybe some way or other he's been serving a bit too, maybe hitting overheads or whatever. So he's been doing something. It's not as if he's going to come from sort of the blank sheet.
Nothing beats the match, though, for sure. Paula says, I know it's a subject discussed before with Jeannie and Milos, but which one of the two is going to be a major winner first?
Well, tough to say. Let's go with Eugenie just because she's gotten closer already. She's been in the Grand Slam final in Wimbledon. And, you know, the women are a little more unpredictable. So I'd go with her. But, you know, Milos is in a pretty good groove right now. He's playing well with some instability in terms of Djokovic and Nadal. And I think, he may get the chance to play Federer.
Door might open up for him.
Yeah, exactly. And so you just never know. But it's pretty close between them. But let's go, you know. Historically, the women have sort of broken through at a younger age as well.
Let's say both. How about that? Tyson says, what are Tom's thoughts on the 32-seed system of the majors these days versus the 16-seed system of the past? And is the need to get a lot of matches under your belt heading into the majors perhaps less of a priority now, given top players are afforded the protection of that 32-seed system?
I suppose that's possible, but there's still, you know, there's still some awfully good players out there who you don't want to play in the early rounds, and there's actually some almost gimmies to play in the early rounds, so it's just a matter of chance who you get through the draw. But obviously when you got the guys 17 through 32 didn't used to have the protection of being seeded, so they used to be there for you to play. So it's a little bit easier that way, and I guess I like it just because I think it gives you a chance to have the better players go a little further, have that protection, and maybe, but in a way, I don't like it because you used to get some crackerjack matches in the first rounds.
T-Bird says he loves the Hawkeye replay technology challenge system, but he says, do you think chair umpires are now less inclined to overrule a line judge because they know the players have the option to challenge and they don't want to be embarrassed by overruling?
Yeah, I think that is the case. I think it's going back a little bit more now. I think I noticed umpires not being afraid to step in and you know, overrule a call or change a call or whatever. When it first came out, I think really that was a tendency because they thought, what the heck? Hawkeye's going to take care of it. Why should I bother, you know, intervening?
Brian emails in, can anything be done about the medical timeout abuse in tennis? It's reached near epidemic levels on the women's tour at time and creeping into the men's game as well. What do you think?
Well, I think, I mean, the bottom line is that you want to make sure the players are healthy and you sort of, I guess, got to trust them that they have a legitimate gripe when they call for the trainer and then take the injury timeout. So I remember at one point, I think a Dementieva match that she was playing against Mary Pierce. Mary Pierce took two medical timeouts back-to-back, took about a 12-minute break in a match. So that has sort of been rectified, but there is a fair amount of time spent just diagnosing what it is. I can take 2 or 3 minutes. Then you got 3 minutes for the medical timeout. So it does go on, but I guess the bottom line is you want to make sure the players stay healthy, so you have to live with it.
One more, and then we got to get to the trivia, and lunch is riding on this, according to our listener, AJ, who says, settling a bet here with a buddy of his at the U of T, who, in Tom's opinion, has the better second serve between Milos and Isner, and who is the better volleyer between those two players?
I'm going to go with Milos with the better second serve, mostly because he has a little more kick on his second serve. He can put a wicked kick on that and knock it right over your head. Who's the better volleyer? I think I'm going to go with Milos as well. Although, geez, it's hard to say. I watched Isner play today against Andy Murray. He hit some unbelievable volleys. So we'll say it's a draw on the volley. We'll go with Milos for the second serve. So I think maybe one guy pays for the main
course. Hey, that's
good.
You know what?
Somebody plays for dessert.
AJ, 50-50. I think that's the way to handle it. Thanks for your questions. We'll do it again in 2 weeks on Thursday, August the 28th. Keep that email handy, roger@sportsnet590.ca. roger@sportsnet590.ca, because Tom has a question, and you'll get two entries to win our terrific Wilson racket. Two entries, the other eight that are won for Roger Cup tickets are already in the draw, but you've got a good chance to do it by answering this question Tom throws.
This is for the Wilson Steam Racket, and it'll definitely make your game better, Roger.
All right.
And the question is, and we're just using Roger so much tonight, what is the name of the new Roger Federer racket? So he's debuted that racket here in Toronto. What's the name of that racket?
The name of Roger Federer's racket. You know it. Email us now, roger@sportsnet590.ca, roger@sportsnet590.ca. We'll announce the winner next week, and you'll have a chance to win that a terrific Wilson's team racket in a couple of weeks as well. Aces has been brought to you by Tennis Canada, leading the growth of tennis in Canada, and by the National Bank, proud sponsors of the Rogers Cup. You can visit them at nbctennis.ca. Thanks to our guests, Michael Russell, Roger Federer, and Vasek Pospisil, technical director Derek Brandale and Matt Brown. And in a couple of weeks, you will be on the road in New York, but we're going to have Murray and Nestor on the program. That'll be fun.
No, it'll be fun. I particularly like Murray. He was really terrific. And now we can tell people they can turn on the TVs and watch Sportsnet 1 and watch Roger against Gael Monfils.
And it's a heck of a match tonight, folks. Roger Lajoie, Tom Tebbit, we'll talk to you again on Thursday, August the 28th. Sportsnet Tonight is coming up next. Thanks for listening to Aces right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.